left on the top of Lebanon for days. So in the Mishnah, so the Mishnayos were giving different examples of institutions with the Rabbanon that were maybe metikin olam, prevent certain kinds of potential stumbling blocks. The first one, of course, we spent a lot of time talking about, but that kind of metikin olam was made in terms of pitul aget. Now we have another one that's relevant to Gittin as well, and soon we're going to move out of the realm of Gittin into a whole slew of other kinds of Tikkun Olam. But now we're still within the world of Gittin, top of the dollar of days. So Mishona, the olden days, are Mishana Shmo, Shma, Shemir, Shemira. Now when a get would be written, so the name of both the man, the woman, the name of the place, wasn't always 100% up to par. We'll see in a minute what that means. But sometimes there was a little bit of a change in the actual name, and we'll see why, what scenario does that mean. The requirement for Shemos in Gittin, they didn't say the Chumash have to write again the name in the first place. The Torah just says the Chos must say the Krisos, so maybe a get doesn't even require names. That's the big machlokes that we showed in the Ran's opinion is that you have to write their names with the Raisa, because it's called the Sefer. The Sefer is a sphere, as a sepa, as a story. It would be a very poor story without characters. You don't know who's doing what. So that's not a story. That's not a Sefer Krisos. And other Rishonim say, no, maybe the requirement for writing names ought to be Drabbanan. Maybe in the Torah, the Chosim of Sefer Krisos. He writes in a piece of paper. A Rebbe Tezcholot, the Bandit, or enshrined. That's a get Minotaur. So whatever it is, either the Raisa or the Drabbanan, you have to have names. And there was a little bit of a strange way the names would sometimes be presented. His kid, Rabbi Gwil HaZokha made a takana. She kosim ish plodi v'choshim sheyeshlo, ish plodis v'choshim sheyeshlo, they take it over. So the Gemara is going to explain what was really going on was that sometimes people are known with different names. You know, today, guys got Hebrew names, got English, got nicknames, people have a lot of different names. So in the olden days, they would write one name, whatever the name people, most people would call it by, they would write that name to get. And that would sometimes lead to a confusion. Because sometimes a person would claim, hey, wait a second, I didn't know that his name was Yosef. I thought his name was Joe. So people get a little bit confused what the right name was. So therefore, the real made a takana that you write the Ish Ploni, whoever he is, the Chol Shum Sheyeshlo, and all other names. So it's a big machlekes that we showed him. What does that mean? You write Yosef and all other names. So some Rishonim said, you just write that phrase, Yosef, and any other name that Yosef may have. Rachel and any other name that Rachel may have. And other Rishonim say, no. You have to write out every single name that Yosef may have. So Yosef, some people call him Jolly, and some people call him whatever different names are. And then it gets labeled because his name and his father's name. So Yosef, who some people call him Joey, and some people call him Yosela, who's the father is a David, and some people call him David, and some people call him, whatever other names. Some people call him Dudu, I don't know, whatever his last name is, whatever different names people have. And then, wait, we're not done. We have the girl's name, and then we have a father's name. So you can have a whole array of different names. So that's what our practice is. In standard Gittin today, in Ashkenazi, what they did, that's what we do, that we spell out every single name that he could potentially be called from. And you can get a lot of them. It sounds a little bit clumsy sometimes, and you get, but that's what our practice is, to fulfill this din of Chol Shum Sheyeshlo, to make sure all the names are right. It gets labored because a lot of the names and the nicknames are not Hebrew names. A lot of them are English names. And then you start, gets complicated how to spell those names. You have to correspond to the right, the right proper halachic, the way that we spell things. So it gets a little bit labored sometimes in the Gittin in terms of names. But this is the Tekhanah from Gemara Zohar. So Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So Yehuda Amar Shmuel tells us, Shochel et b'nei Nidus Hayav Rav Gamliel. People lived out of Nidus Hayav, out in the far islands, out in the far flung lands. They sent the message to Rav Gamliel. But they other Maboy Misham Lekan, Shmo Yosef, Kerala Yochanan, Yochanan Kerala Yosef. So the people would sometimes come and we'd ask, what's your name? So, well, and again, Yosef. Now they call me Yochanan. So, we know this all the time, people like that, that they call themselves by different names than their official halachic names. So what do we do? How are they going to divorce their wives? So when this question was posed to Rav Gamliel, I wouldn't be surprised, again, just culturally, historically, that this makes a lot of sense in David Sayyam. They say, yeah, we're in very, very non-Jewish circles. So the names, we get switched much more. You grow up in the shtetl, you grow up in, everyone's filled and everyone's calling everyone by the same name. So there's probably less of that. Today, people have multiple names because we travel different circles. So what do you do? So I'm going to reveal this. So because of this concern, Reveal got up and he made the following ordinance, following Takana. Shukosri ish ploni v'choshim v'yeshlo, ish ploni v'choshim v'yeshlo, 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 v'yeshlo So Amar Ravashi. So Ravashi says that even Rav Gamliel, there's a little bit of a boundary for this, not all the time. Amar Ravashi, this is only true if we have a chazaka that people really call these names. Yes, guy, what's your name? Well, I like the following nickname. Does anybody call you that? No, nobody really calls me by that name. That's not a name. The name means that it's chazaka. There are people that we know for a fact that people call by that name. Amar Rabbi Abba Ravashi. Rabbi Abba told Ravashi, Rabbi Mari Rabbeloza Kamen Kabun Sech, that observation that Ravashi made is correct, that the early Amaroyim also bought into that idea, that it's not just any single name. At one time, a guy once called, we have this issue very often, that people are not from the people who were not from, now, Bali Tshuva. We asked him, what's your father's name? So guys, he has no. What was his father's Hebrew name? I have no idea. He has no idea what his father's Hebrew name was. Did your father have Hebrew name? Yeah, he had a bar mitzvah 60 years ago. He had a bar mitzvah. Does anybody call him by that name? No, he hasn't. The guy hasn't come to shul in 60 years since his bar mitzvah. He has no idea what the name is. He's got to go look on a birth certificate on a birth record from a male what his name. So it's very, very tricky when you have names that are not really chasuk, they're not really used. They're names that have just been kind of out of use. So that's a big, big, serious question when you put a name in, when you don't. Usually in Gittin, obviously, we're much, much more machmer than Ksubas. You know, Ksubas also, we try to get the names right. But in Ksubas, you know, we're a little bit more, you know, the ramifications, the consequences are significantly less. There was one time when
this is just an exam we should take on. I mean, it's not like these are Ksubas, the
right. Right, but you're right. But if we start to get wrong names in there, that could throw off a gap, potentially. It's not a good thing to have. To have wrong names in there is not a good thing to get. So we want to make sure that we're supposed to be writing what we're writing, no more, no less. I remember once I was in a set of condition for a fellow. He was he was born in Iran, and he escaped Iran. So his name, his parents, nobody remembered, nobody knew. We weren't sure. He had a little Iranian name, he had a Hebrew name. He wasn't sure what his name was at his birth, you know, whatever. So it was the only time that in the Ksuba itself, the post humanity, your mom can't make sense of what the real name is. So you write the Ksuba like right again. You write like Hamachuna this, and you add all the names. Usually in the Ksuba, you'll only hear it's David Yitzchak Ben Avram Moshe. That's right. So you won't hear like these to mystery this, Hamachuna this. You won't hear that in the Ksuba. But everyone says, well, if your mom can't make heads and tails out of what the person's name is, so then you can put in this kind of model I can get also that his father's also known as this, and he's also known as this, and also known as that. I remember there was a name, one of the names in India, it was a Persian name, and it was very, I had no idea how to pronounce it. And I remember I asked two Persian rabbanim about how to spell it, how to pronounce it, and they gave me two diametrically opposed different answers about how to pronounce it. One was telling me, no, that sound doesn't exist in Persian. The other one says, of course it does. So what was I supposed to do? The poor Ashkenazi rabbi from Galicia roots is trying to figure out how to pronounce the name in Persian that has been used in 100 years. It gets a little bit tricky.
So you put both opposed.
I forgot
titles, they don't put it, can't be called professor.
Professor, no, we don't usually make a fuss out of that kind of stuff, right? That's it. Okay, anyway, back to the story.
What about if someone's known as Doc?
If people really call him Doc, there are some people down there. I remember my kids at a high school, boys at a high school teacher. I don't remember what the guy's name was, but it was Doc. Everyone called him Doc. So it's, everybody calls a person Doc. You're right in the Doc, whatever you have to, right? You have to put that in. Okay, back to this. So, So we have a braisa that supports Ravashi's idea that this whole idea of writing extra names is only when there's a real chazaka that he's definitely called those names. Person has two wives. One of them lives in Yehuda, one lives in Golil. That was always the description of the days of Bayesheni when they would divide up their, describe the different parts of Eretz Yisrael. So there was Yehuda, there was the southern part, and there was the northern part. Sometimes they weren't even part of the same kingdom. Sometimes in the days of the Greeks, the post-Greeks, sometimes the Talbis in the south, and so Yusuf in the north, and sometimes it was literally two different political divisions in Eretz Yisrael. The Lo Shnei Shemos. And this fellow's two names, Echad Yehuda and Echad Begolil. So when he's in Yehuda, he's known by one name. So Begolil, they call him something else. But Girish is Ishto, and again, it's not so wild that these were, even though, you know, we think Yehuda and Galil, you know, we think, what's a bus ride from Yerushalayim to Tiberia? But in certain times in Bayesheni, there were little different malchus, different worlds and different cultures. So it wasn't so crazy that you have a guy has to go with different names. He's got a business name in Gaul, that's more of a Gaul name, and vice versa, Yehuda. So the Girish is Ishtar Shem Yehuda, Bishmo Shem Yehuda. It's Ishtar Shem Gaul, Bishmo Shem Gaul. So what if he uses the Yehuda name in Yehuda and the Gaul name in Gaul? Eidim Gureshes, Achi Garsh, Ishtar Yehuda, Bishmo Shem Yehuda, Bishem, Gaul, the Gaul, Imo. Even though the get has been given Yehuda, but if people in Gaul call him this, he's got to throw that name in for good luck as well. It's Ishtar Shem Gaul, Bishmo Shem Gaul, Shem Yehuda, Imo, and vice versa. He has to incorporate both names. Yotzel Mokham Acher, what if he goes to another place? The Girish Biach Echem Gureshes. So that is what they, if he goes to China and he uses one of the names, it's good. So says the one of Hamas, Shem Yehuda, what do you mean if he goes somewhere else? So we can just Michael one of the names. We just got to finish saying that you got to write all the names. So the answer is, Al-Shema, we know the difference is obvious. Hadis Chazak, Hamas Chazak. What the Brice is trying to tell you is that in the first case, so we all, he's known by all these names here. I mean, his primary name is Yehuda, but everyone knows that he's got this backup name somewhere else. He goes to China, no one ever heard of the other name. So no one ever heard of the other name. So then, technically speaking, you wouldn't have to use that that name. So Shema, we know. So I think Mark gives an example of this. There was a woman whose name was Miriam, Upurta Sarah. And some people would call her Sarah also. So Amrin Ardoa. So they said in Ardoa that when you write a gift for such a woman, you have to write Miriam Lechoshum Sheyeshla. You have to identify her primary name first and write she is Miriam and other names that she may have. For Lo Sarah Lechoshum Sheyeshla. She didn't write Sarah as the primary name. That's a nickname, secondary name, two people call her by. But you have to first decide what the person's primary name is.
It was actually more like seemed to indicate that you don't have to write the names, that you just write the
So that's the question. So some Rishonim said that you just write the phrase the Chol Shem Shiyeshla. Rabbi Tam said it means you write the Chol Shem Shiyeshla. That you write every other name that you
have. Here when it said Miriam and Sarah, when it said the Chol Shem Shiyeshla, like here it was just. It's giving us the two names.
Okay, maybe I don't know. I can't talk about it. But the Ashkenaz, for sure, they write all the every single last name. So it's actually this sugya. It was one of the most practical, complicated, and confusing part of it was getting. There were svarim that are written about how to spell. There in the middle of Evan Ezra was getting. There's an entire pages and pages on how to spell certain names, the Yiddish names, because they're so. We know how to spell Miriam Zara, those are names of the Tanakh, but we don't know how to spell a lot of other names. They're very, very new ones. How to spell them properly. And then when you start, superimposing English names into the picture, so it becomes complex. There's a certain clone that we have in Rosh Hakodesh and Yiddish, how to spell things that should try to be representative of the name as best as possible.
But why does it have to be exact spelling if you can make out the name?
So sometimes it's sometimes it's not so simple. So there are certain names that are very, very close in terms of,
But there are other names there. You're going to know that it's that person.
Again, the color wasn't supposed to have all names. So the question is, let's say you have a guy whose name is Leib, and they call him Leib. Is that the same name? Maybe it is, depending on what we know. There are a lot of names that are very, very close calls.
The problem is with the Yiddish female names.
Right, a lot.
Whether you ended with a Hay.
Aleph and Hay. That's right. Because in Yiddish, and really the official rule in Ilchus Gittin is that all names that come from Lashon HaKodesh, you end with a Hay. Names that like Yehuda, Moshe. Names that come from those are like biblical names, so to speak. Names that come from Yiddish and from other languages, Aramaic, all the names end with an Aleph. So that's what's interesting. There's Machlok is how to spell the name Makiva. The way used to it in the Gemara with an Aleph, in Talmud Yerushalmi it's with a Hey. Mm-hmm. Because it's not clear whether Akiva is just a cute derivative of the name Yaakov. It's quasi name Yaakov. It's really a Hebrew, it's really a biblical name. Or is it really a separate name? It's a separate independent name. So you have a lot of these kinds of names. My daughter's name is Blima. So Blima technically is a Yiddish name. It's a Yiddish word. It's supposed to be spelled an Aleph at the end. So a lot of people, like in modern Israel today, people cringe. They don't like Aleph. Nobody likes Aleph at the end of names. So all of a sudden, all the hey, so she spells it. We named her. So other powers beyond my control decided that we're going to name with a hey. So she goes with a hey at the end of her name. So we always joke that we'll see. It's not a condition. We'll have to decide whether he's going to go back when you write the ksuba. So whether you're really supposed to spell it with an aleph. So we'll see. You have a lot of fega, A lot of things.
But here's the thing, we shred the get today and give her just the documents. What does that say?
It'll say whatever it says in the get.
Meaning it'll have the same listing names.
I don't remember anymore. Take a look at it. We don't shred it. They don't give it, but the get itself, not necessarily because the ksuba will very make us. So we don't write all things. Like if it's not a condition, we'll ask, how do you get called up for an aliyah? So, for example, my Hebrew name is Tzvi Menachem. Many people know I have to have another name. It's called Harvey. So when it doesn't say Harvey, I'm like Tzvi. but let's say, you know, if David Shimon's getting married, it'll say David Shimon. But if David Shimon's getting divorced, so it may say David Shimon Habachuna Sibi, Habachuna Dave, you know, they say a lot of other names that are in there. So yeah, it gets complicated. There are books. And then once you figure out what the names are, then you also have to write the Shemakom. You have to write the name of the place also. It gets even more complicated. So like, if you have, is it Bergenfield or is it Bergenfield? Is that above? Is that Ayan?
Some last names now.
No, we don't put last names. Like, Subas are different practices.
Because according to this, they should include last names in modern times.
So that minute is a different note, but less like Subas, some do and some don't. Last name, the problem with last names is that I always get nervous when writing last names. It's very hard to spell. You don't always have a clear cut spelling on last names. I mean, I can tell you the name Sobolovsky, the way it's spelled today, was not the way it was spelled by my great grandfather. I have his sparim that had an awful lot of olives in there. Samach, olive, days, olive, lam, and olive, vav, Sobolovsky. It was very, very different. My father modernized it to a Samach Pelham and Fay Samach Kufyud. So it's a very, very different spelling than it was.
But according to Gemara, that you're required to put what everybody's called, it seems that it's like a requirement to put the last name, because that's people called by their last name.
Right. Nice, we don't do it.
Yeah.
If you have a guy, let's say it was called Sabo, that becomes like a kino, that becomes like another name. Right. That becomes like somebody that the imam refers to the person as. Right. Okay, next Mishnah. So the Mishnah now goes on to other kinds of tikkun olams. Ein almana nifras benichsi yisomim ala b'shvua. That if a woman is coming, almana is coming to collect the ksuba, so we know, of course, that the husband dies. So she has a claim against the estate of the Yisomim, that those Yisomim may be her children, may not her son, maybe another marriage. But she has a right to come and take them to the Torah to collect the ksuba. So if she insists on getting a ksuba, and they claim that they already have paid back the ksuba, so she has the upper hand, but she has the ksuba in her hand, she has a document in her hand, so she's going to collect. But the halacha is that she has to take a shvuah. She has to swear that she hasn't received any of the money before. That was the old din. That was always the halacha. Nimnu l'hashviya. In the later years, but they didn't want to give shvuahs. They didn't like to minister shvuahs. Like today, nobody wants to give a shvuah. Give a shvuah, it's a mistake. Shekin, terrible thing. So they stopped giving a shvuahs. The problem was that if they stopped, they didn't want to administer the shuas, then the Yisomim will say, well, we're not paying until she swears. And the Beis will say, well, we don't want to make somebody swear. Who knows? So they were going in circles, and the mice, the women weren't collecting the ksubas. So Rabbi Gamaliel came up with an idea to convince us that she started the truth without an actual formal shuah. His king, Rabbi Gamaliel, is off. Mentioned they know there is the Yisomim Gomashi Yitzhak, that instead of taking a shuah, you know, the hand of the Sefer with the Shem Hashem, etc., the whole drama. So they told her to take a neder to say that if I was paid back my ksuba, so then all meat should be awesome. So they take some kind of a neder that it doesn't have that chum, it doesn't have that severity of a shvuah with the Shem Hashem, the Sefer Torah, the whole picture. But obviously she's going to be telling the truth. She doesn't want to spend the rest of her life not eating meat, not eating fruit, whatever the Yisomim think is an appropriate kind of a neder for her to take. So that was Rabbi Gamliel's watered-down version to enable her to collect the lactic soup. That was one of the tikkun olams of Rabbi Gamliel. Then another tikkun olam was, Eidim chosmin ala get mibbe tikkun olam, that Eidim sign and get in order to make the world run a little better. Mibbe tikkun olam. What does that mean? So I was going to explain that as a throwback to what we learned in Ion. According to Rabbi Elazar, Minatari, you don't have to sign a get. Minatari, just write a get, give it to the woman in front of two Eidim, and sure, you have Eidim and Sira Kassim. So there's really no reason to sign a get, Minatari. However, it's a very bad idea not to sign a get, because how in the world in 20 years from now is she going to prove that she got divorced? She's going to have to bring the Eidim and Sira. says the enemy's sister still alive. He said they're in town. So she's gonna, how is she ever gonna prove that she's divorced? So the only way for her to prove it is to produce a get with a divorced. So therefore, Gamliel said across the board, side again. Don't take any chances, side again. The reason Machlekes and Mishonim, we spoke about this also in the other Shurim, the Yachurim. Some Mishonim say there was a formal takon of Rabbi Gamliel, you must side again. The Rabbanan, you have to side. He didn't. Yeah, but the Yerubi Kasha, there's an absolute Chiyuv Gamliel with the Rabbanan, you must have a Bechasib on again. And other Mishonim, many Mishonim say there was no such takon, but Gamliel just encouraged it. Gamliel made a Tikkun Olam to encourage about they did him to try to get people to side get it. But if you want to live a little dangerously, says, I don't know. I have full faith that these Adim Asiro will be around in the 20 years. No, you want to be foolish, be foolish. No one's forcing you not to be foolish. But the bottom line is, all getting today are signed. There's no question about it. Nobody would ever even get today without the witnesses signed. Not it. The next case in the Mishnah, probably the most famous of the Tikkun Olam, is Prusbol. We spoke so much about them. And other times earlier in the year, that Min HaTorah, so technically speaking, all the debts are going to be canceled because of Shemitah, and Hillel realized that people weren't lending each other money. That's a terrible thing. So he made a kunz, he made a chap, and that was called a prusbol, to figure out a way to almost circumvent the din of Shemitah's ksafim again. And it's actually, in the next blot or two, I was going to talk about all the intricacies of this particular takon, all the susan, both 90% of prusbol is in the next blot or two in the second. So the Gemara just raised the question about this takana of what was going on in the olden days before Rabbi Gamliel stepped up. It sounds like that an almana wants to collect a ksuba, she's got to take a shura. She's the only one. Yes, the Gemara Ma'iri almana. Until Kli Amanami. This is a general rule. This is nothing unique to an almana. Anytime you want to get money away from your somim, you have to take a shura. That kind of line we know for a fact is the Mishnah. It's Mishnah Ksuba, it's Mishnah Shvuas. Habali par minichsi yisomim, lo yipar ala b'shvua. Any and every time you want to take money away from yisomim, you have to swear that you're adopted that money. Even if you have a shtar, you have a document. So normally, 99% of the time, if you have the document, you're going to win the case. You're going to win the case. You still have to swear that you didn't collect previously. So why does the Mishnah single out an Amman and say the Amman has to swear? Everybody has to swear. Why not? Amana is three. The reason why the Mishnah spoke specifically about it, Amana, was Sakadat Khabina. I would have thought the following. That Mishumchina Akil Rabban Gabba. That maybe Chazal did away with that shvua, specifically by an Amana, because they wanted to encourage the women to get married. It's always a delicate social balance here. On the one hand, the women do want to get married. On the other hand, sometimes the women, if they feel that they're going to lose out, their financial concerns aren't being addressed, aren't being addressed properly. So you never know. So therefore, so Chazal will walk in this very, very tight balance to try to make sure that the women want to get married and to make sure that the men want to get married as well. So Rashi says, that maybe they made life easier for the almanas. Maybe a woman should always know, don't worry, if Khalil, you end up to be an almana, you'll get your money right away. You won't take such a shura. So I would have thought that maybe they would have done such a thing. Kamashwa they didn't, because they were trying very delicately. On the one hand, we want to protect the interests of the women. On the other hand, protect the interests of the son himself, because that must always balance in life.
Some men are her children.
Not necessarily.
No, I'm saying, when these some men are her children, why, in other words, the question is,
it's kind of across the board. Like we're not going to make different standards in terms of who these children are. So the bottom line is she's coming against the estate of her late husband. So whoever knows Yerushim happened to be. So therefore Chazal wanted to keep this balance right. We want to encourage women to get married to feel secure. On the other hand, we don't want to infringe upon the rights of the Yisrael. So the bottom line is the din is that the woman has to swear. But the later years, the Beis Din refused to administer the Shvua. So now that got us into a problem. Now we're in a problem. If Beis Din is not giving her Shvua and she's not collecting, so then the whole Ksuba.
The woman wants to take a Shvua,
Beis Din didn't want to do it. Yeah, Beis Din was weary to do it. Beis Din was, that's what the Gemara was going to discuss. What was wrong? Why are we so weary to take the Shvua? That's exactly what's happening. So Nimnu Lashvia. My time. So why exactly are we being so weary? She wants to live dangerously. Take a shvua. Maybe because of a story that Rav Kahana said. I mean, a similar kind of idea. You know, Rav Kahana's story, whatever that story happened, not exactly sure, but the idea was present. The Amr of Kahana, the Amr of Yudam Rav. So different versions exactly who said the story. But my Yisrael of the Mechad, Krishnei Batsaris. Once it was the time when it was during a drought. Shehifkid Dina Zov Eitz Almana, that a person had a golden coin and they gave it to an almana, gave it to a widow just to hold on to it to watch. And Yichasu Mekatsho Kemach, and she put it into her flower bin. So she put it with her flower. She thought that would be a good, pretty safe place. I was going to start to scrounging around inside where her flower was, trying to find expensive jewels. Now, for us in the past, made a mistake. And she was baked it better than a shlussel challah. This is a golden challah. Now, for us in the past, then a snussel of honey. And a mistake, she gave that loaf of bread to the honey. So the honey was happy, but the original owner of the corn was too happy. The Yamin Bob al Adinar, that once the later on, a few days later, so the Baal HaDinar, the owner of the coin came, he said, give me my dinner back. So she cursed on her. Shouldn't be a thing. She's trying to yell and scream, what do you mean? I don't have it. I don't know what happened to it. I'm told I didn't steal it. What do you mean? Bush was stolen. I didn't steal it. She had no idea what happened to it. So she put a curse on one of her children. So Amaloha, Yamu, Adabat, Shebezach, and Manah said, Khalil, 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 the curse was fulfilled. So Chazal said, Shammacham, Dabar, they heard that who knows the Koyach of Shruas. In the end of the day, she lied. She didn't mean to lie, but the Bible said Hashem's name and swore based it, which was a sheker. She didn't think she was telling a lie. So Afal Pichain, she was punished. That much more so, we have to pack it, we have to shake. When you talk about saying Hashem's name, when it's a Torah, when it's a Shua, it's not something that we're going to play around with. It was a regular Shua. So my time, I ansha, the Ishtar Shila Mokom Dinar. Why exactly was she punished? At the end of the day, she didn't really gain anything. She wasn't like she gained money from the Shua. So the answer, she did. She gained a little bit of money because that the instead of the flour that she would normally have to give, so the coin took up a little bit of her flour. So she benefited from that coin. So it's not exactly what the Shmuel meant, but it wasn't good what happened over here. Umay mishenishba be'emes mishenishba. I'm sorry. Umay mishenishba be'emes kimi mishenishba be'emes. So it wasn't that. That she literally swore emes. The Maisa, she lied, but she didn't realize she was lying. She was an honest person, but never she made a mistake. But it just shows that we don't want to take any chances. That Shavuos are not something to play around with, and therefore they stopped giving Shavuos, and now the problem comes. So MK and Hai, she didn't collect the Shavuos. That was when the ticket over the real comes in.
Can we see this stuck again? Because it says Ani.
Yeah.
So if it's an ani, she gets the schar, but the tipa of flour that she saved.
Right.
If it was the sale, you can say that.
Right. Yeah, right. It's a little funny, the ishtash, like, that she gained half a speck of flour. Yeah, you're right. Okay, I'm not sure. So the Gemara bottom line is, the Gemara includes that for this kind of, again, not necessarily this story proper, but for these kinds of things, and when you think Shavuos, it's just too dangerous, it's just too risky, therefore Chazal didn't want to do it anymore. So the Gemara now goes on the question, how does that fit? Is that really true? Is every case of that's true? So I have to pick up this in the next story.